I'm Tamara Cherry filling in for Evan Bray. Thanks for joining us. I might be sharing too much enthusiasm for this topic, but I love following geopolitics. And our next guest has written a book with the term Cold War 2.0 in it. And before I give you the whole one, I need to ask you, George Takash, esteemed author, researcher, all of these things, because you're calling us, whatever it was, in Toronto, I believe, right? Are you in Toronto?
That's where I live, yeah. Oh,
okay. Are you more worried about another Cold War or about your air conditioning breaking down with 40 degrees Humidex today?
Well, touch wood, the air conditioning and the electrical supply is holding firm. So, yeah, no, I'm thinking more about the Cold War. But to your point about temperature, we need to do a bunch of things to make sure the Cold War doesn't become a hot
war. Oh, that is quite the segue. All right, it's time for me to properly introduce you and your book. George Takash was recently in Saskatoon talking about this book. It's called Cold War 2.0, Artificial Intelligence in the New Battle Between China, Russia, and America. George, we obviously don't have enough time, even in this entire four-hour show, to scratch the surface on this big issue, but I'm going to try to do the best to walk us through it. From what I understand, your book really makes the argument for why, I mean, it really does make the argument for why, obviously, Canada needs to get serious about national defense. But first, I want to dig into the title a little bit, Cold War 2.0. You go back to 2014 when Putin, when Russian President Vladimir Putin, I should say, took his first run at Ukraine and annexed Crimea. And around that time, China was doing interesting things, became very aggressive in the South China Sea, militarizing islands, picking up its coercive actions that are really just shy of armed conflict against Taiwan. And you make the argument that had we called this a Cold War back in 2014 and taken steps then as a group of democracies, you think that we might have been able to prevent Putin from doing his full-scale invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago. How do we get there? Bring this into focus for me.
Yeah, I think you've got that narrative down pretty well. You obviously do like geopolitics. Good on you.
Yes, I'm a nerd.
But what it is, essentially, is that we've got two autocrats, which mean they are ruling all by themselves. They don't have, you know, other elected officials. There's no democracy in mainland China or in Russia. And these two autocrats, Putin and Xi Jinping, don't want to follow the rules. And the biggest breach of the rules currently is, of course, Ukraine, as you pointed out, both by effectively stealing Ukraine back in 2014 and then, of course, the full-scale invasion in February of 2022. And your point, I think, is a really, really good one, and one that I've made in the book, that, you know, had we called them on it, particularly Putin in 2014, and said, look, this is unacceptable. We have a United Nations system. We have a system of, you know, collective defense amongst the democracies to avoid wars, I think. And had we done a number of steps that we can get into in a second, that, yeah, we could have avoided the big, big full-scale invasion in February 22, because unfortunately, Tamara, the autocrats really only understand one thing, and that is power. And so you have to build up your deterrence to keep them from ever expanding their, you know, militarist objectives.
So this what you're saying kind of puts me in a point of unease. I mean, there's a lot in the term Cold War 2.0 that can put us in a state of unease, George Takash. But I've heard you say that something that was missing in 2014 was this groundswell, and you just sort of mentioned it, of indignation, just by regular people like you and me in these democracies like Canada, to tell our leaders that this sort of behavior cannot be tolerated. We can't let it go. We've got to do something. And the reason I worry about this is because now something I've noticed here in Canada when we're looking at what's going on in Ukraine is it, I feel like support for Ukraine is waning and support of Russia and their actions is increasing. And I can't help but think about the misinformation, disinformation campaigns that happen on social media by autocrats like Russian President Vladimir Putin. So what sort of state does that put us in now? If this is a Cold War, as you're calling it, Cold War 2.0, what sort of state are we in, given that we didn't do enough in 2014? And now here we are, and we're in the midst of, you know, these real problematic disinformation campaigns through social media.
Yeah, so there's about 2 hours of discussion in what you just said. So let me just, you know, very, very briefly, I think you're absolutely right. There is, I'll call it, you know, Ukraine fatigue that's setting in amongst Canadians and a number of other, you know, countries that are democracies. And part of the reason for writing the book is to re-energize people to say, look, on Ukraine, we certainly aren't entitled to get tired and fatigued. They're the ones doing the fighting. We're just writing a check. We're providing them with the weapons that they need. And they're absolutely willing to take the fight on themselves. So, you know, shame on us if we're starting to get fatigued. And the good news is, because there is a hopeful side to the book, which is that when it comes to high tech, which is why it's 2.0 in the title and not just 2, the democracies actually do innovation and technology better than the autocracies. So when it comes to artificial intelligence, high-end semiconductor chips, we actually are in a better position than they are. But again, we just need to get energized and motivated and smart. And we're starting, to their credit, the Biden administration has started to cut off the flow of semiconductor chips and AI from the democracies to China, to Russia. It's not perfect yet, but it's at least, you know, we're making good inroads there. But we've got to stick to it. And particularly in Canada, you know, our military is underfunded, grossly underfunded. And to your last point, you know, when you ask a member of parliament, whether in, you know, Saskatoon or Toronto or Vancouver, and you say, well, look, you know, why aren't we doing more about Cold War 2.0? They say, oh, well, you know, nobody talks about it at the door in the run-up to the election. Mm. And so a big part of writing the book in terms of why was so that people could read it so that when that, you know, member of parliament or the candidates of whatever party come to your door, you absolutely say, look, I'm interested in a whole bunch of issues, but one of them is the geopolitical situation in the world, and Canada has got to do more. So when you go back to Ottawa, you know, please start to act responsibly.
Throw out a few more billion dollars on military spending. Yes. Okay. I want to get into that after the break. George Takash, of course, I'm speaking with George Takash, who's in the, what can we call it? The sauna of Toronto today, 40 degrees humidex. He's the author of Cold War 2.0, Artificial Intelligence in the New Battle Between China, Russia, and America. Coming up after the break, why the urgency for this increase in military spending? You're listening to Tamara Cherry on The Evan Bray Show, 980 CJME, 650 CKOM. Begging masses for the same. Nothing like some Black Sabbath to get us through the second Cold War on this planet. And George, our board op, saying to me just a moment ago, how are kids going to learn about the Cold War, though, if they can't have cell phones in schools? To our discussion about cell phone ban, hopefully coming to Saskatchewan at some point. No, but in all seriousness, this is a very serious conversation that I'm having with George Takash, who is the author of Cold War 2.0, Artificial Intelligence in the New Battle Between China, Russia, and America. And like, George, you were just telling me a moment ago, you wrote this book because you want people to understand this is critical. This is urgent. This is stuff you should be talking to your politicians about when they come and knock at your door. So let's talk about this and what Canada can be doing to prepare ourselves, because I think that we all know, I mean, we should know by now with some of the rhetoric that we've heard from Donald Trump in the United States, among other reasons, that we cannot be relying on our neighbors to the south to keep us safe from the bullies as they bring their submarines into our Arctic waters, right, George Takacs? So let's talk about military spending in Canada. We've never come close to reaching the NATO consensus of spending 2% of our GDP on defense spending. Getting to 2% would mean spending another, what is it, $20 billion a year? Where do we find that money? And how critical is it that we do find that money moving forward through this, what you're calling Cold War 2.0?
So just before I get to that one, actually, let me put in a plug for the group that hosted me in Saskatoon last week. Because if your listeners want to know more about the world out there, including the Cold War, but a bunch of other stuff, the Canadian International Council has a very expert branch in Saskatoon. If you go on thecic.org and then scroll down to the Saskatoon branch, there's a gentleman, Dan Sutherland, and he is a force of energy, and he will invite you in, and you'll be really getting up the steep curve. Now,
or read your book. I'm going to give you that plug. Or read Cold War 2.0.
I'm assuming all your listeners will rush to Amazon and get the book or your local favorite bookstore.
Of course.
But to your narrow point of, you know, what can Canada do, you're about right on the math. To get to the NATO 2% mark is probably another $17 to $18 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you say, well, you know, how do we get there? It's not like money grows on trees.
Or it's not like new recruits grow on trees. We've got a huge recruitment issue in our Canadian military, George. Here's the money, but who wants to be paid that money?
We do. We're about, you know, wait for it. We're about 15,000 new recruits short on a full-time military of about 68,000, 70,000
wow.
people.
That in and of itself is a whole hour-long conversation of how we fix that problem. But let's just assume that suddenly, you know, tens of thousands of people want to be part of the Canadian military. Let's assume that we get the 16, right. 17, 20 billion dollars a year for military spending. I want to talk about, because we just have a few minutes left, unfortunately, I want to talk about the subtitle to your book, Artificial Intelligence in the New Battle Between China, Russia, and America. So when we're talking about that, all these extra billions of dollars a year, I'm assuming that you're going to say this needs to go to technology. What sort of technology is going to dictate the next hot war if this Cold War does indeed go that way?
Well, a big chunk of it needs to go to technology. And the big, big new thing is drones.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've learned anything from the Ukraine war, it's just how critical drones are, and the drones are being powered by artificial intelligence. And so what you're going to see, not just in the military, but for instance, all throughout, you know, Saskatchewan, whether, you know, you're in agriculture, you're in services, mining, potash, you name it, AI is going to be coming into your world just the way computers came in, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And that AI is something that we have to embrace, we have to work with. And in the military, there's a heavy lift coming because they've got to digitize the military to be able to, you know, play at the A-League or the, you know, the major leagues if you're a baseball fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to get more AI into our military, but it also means you need smart, younger people who are tech savvy. So part of that 16,000 shortfall of people is a bunch of, you know, 20, 22-year-olds who live and breathe technology. So,
well, this is something I wanted to ask you about. We've just got a minute left, George, but I'm actually reading Walter Isaacson's Elon Musk biography right now, and I find it fascinating how billionaires like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos are privatizing the space industry, doing things that NASA would historically have been directed to do. Can our government rely on its own people to build up our military capabilities? Or should we be turning to Silicon Valley and encouraging and looking to the private sector to bring us up to speed?
Well, you're actually raising one of my big, big concerns. If we just outsource the digitization of our military to the United States,
right,
in particular the big tech companies.
How about to Waterloo? How about to Waterloo?
Well, Waterloo's better, you know, Canadian-owned is better. But, you know, we're just going to be compounding the problem because it's all about, you know, maintaining sovereignty instead of frittering it away. Now, you work with the tech sector as a partner, absolutely. But it's critical that Canada have its own, you know, co-pilots in the seat.
And we don't really get along with big tech here. I mean, look what's going on with Facebook and journalism and everything. George Takacs, I'm afraid we have to leave it there. But what this tells me is we have to have you back on and talk more geopolitics again. So I'm holding on to your name. Producer Libby, we're going to hold on to your name. We're going to have you back on another time to continue this conversation. But I really appreciate it. And I encourage anyone out there to go pick up George's latest book, Cold War 2.0, Artificial Intelligence in the New Battle Between China. I'm Tamara Cherry, in for Evan Bray on The Evan Bray Show. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.